You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
He was supposed to be anti-war, and he's supposed to lower prices and like make housing cheaper. And he promised he was going to do it right away.
How could they possibly have known that he couldn't do
that? And I'm 20 years old and I don't know anything. And I thought he was going to be able to wave a magic wand and all of this was going to happen.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. We got a big show this week. Before we
Sarah seemed a little grumpy in the green room.
Started.
So you got to watch out. We might have angry Sarah today. Oh, who knows?
I can't wait because I need some angry Sarah. But I also need some good Sarah. Sarah, your ears must have been burning yesterday when Mona and I were taping a show because we were talking about you because I needed some grace. I was looking for Queen Mona to help me love people and she couldn't do it. And so I'm going to be coming to you to help me love people.
Okay.
Before we get started, hit like, hit subscribe, follow the channel. That stupid little like button really matters. Please hit it. Please hit it.
And that would
be great for us. All right. So we got some double taco. What do we call that? Do we call that a chalupa? Where Donald Trump did
I took my daughter to the Taco Bell for the first time.
Yeah.
It is disgusting. It is unbelievable how disgusting the Taco Bell is. I got to tell you.
Is it?
Even my child didn't like it.
She should only consume Taco Bell drunk.
She was like, is this going to give me diarrhea? I was like, absolutely. Possibly.
And anyway. Now word from our sponsor, Taco Bell. Dong. Live Moss. Okay. So over the weekend, we had Donald Trump taco on his deportations of migrants who work in farm communities and in the service industry for hotels. And then 5 days later, 3 days later, he then tacoed his taco, It's all very interesting, and I do feel like, in a way, Trump has figured something out, and it's something very dangerous, and that he has figured out that he can just enforce this stuff in blue states and just hurt economies for Democrats and urban dwellers.
He can't, actually.
Okay. Well, I would love to hear both of your thoughts with this. Tim, you look like you're fired up and ready.
I'm ready. Well, I thought you were going another way. I think Trump does have an insight here that is politically dangerous for us who don't like him. But that's different from what you just laid out. So I'll get to that in a second, because I want to just go right at this question. I feel like this is where the Tim is sometimes right shirt needs to be taken out. I have been absolutely consistent on this on every resistance show where they're like, where anybody wants to talk about how Trump is going to just not deport like his friends in red states and he's just going to go after blue states and it's fake and it's what blah blah blah. And I'm just like, no, that's not how an immigration system works. That our system of justice is huge and complicated, and there are a lot of people with individual incentives, and Trump has created an environment where every person's incentive is to be as cruel and fucked up to immigrants as possible. And that includes local sheriffs, includes U.S. Attorney's Office. I think I mentioned on this pod last week, my buddy was in a U.S. Attorney's Office. I guess I'll anonymize it. And it was like, they've added a whole floor to this U.S. Attorney's Office just for immigration purposes. Whoever is the head of that office wants Stephen Miller to like him, might run for governor someday, wants to be promoted, and could not be seen as a cuck on immigration. And so I'm sorry, if you put in a fucking cruel and brutal immigration regime from the top, then people are going to suffer all the way through. Now, it is true that you can focus your resources on blue states and you want to escalate fights with blue cities and blue states and Democratic politicians. They're going to do that. Like, there'll be an emphasis for sure. And it's true that, like, you know, on an individual basis, like, can a couple of Trump's hotel buddies get a carve out? Sure. Right. Like, is Mar-a-Lago going to be raided? No. Right. Like, could we find, are there going to be, you know, a handful of big farmers who donate a bunch of money who are able to fucking go behind the scenes and whatever, grease out? Yeah, sure. Like, there'll be specific examples, but I was not surprised at all to see Trump back down on the hotel and ag thing. I thought it was just PR and him telling a couple of his buddies to calm down. He's not coming for them. And that the reality is they are 100% committed to the biggest mass deportation campaign in history. And the only way to do the biggest mass deportation campaign in history is to deport a lot of people who don't deserve it, who live in a lot of places, including red places, and who work in businesses, including businesses owned by Republicans. And that's going to continue. The pain will continue.
Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And I also think, like, it's pretty easy to see how this happens, right? Like, he's, immigration's his thing. It's what he goes, right? When the economy, he's not, like, he's sucking wind on the economy and he's sucking wind on foreign policy. Like, he goes to immigration. It is his go-to move where his base will let him do the worst things. And I think what happens, right, is his rich friends do call him up. And Trump is caught between two parts of himself. The part that loves to be like, oh yeah, I can carve things out for you because I'm Trump and I'm the king of all things. Except then somebody walks into his office when he does this. He's like, I'm going to tweet this, right? We're going to pull this back. Right. I've gotten 10 phone calls from people I like and respect. And they say this is losing them money. And I didn't know. Who knew that all these illegal immigrants were propping up these major economic factors in our country? I'm learning this for the first time. Putin's a bad guy, too. Did you know that? So Trump's learning.
He's gone crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, Trump's getting a little bit of an education in how these things really work. And Stephen Miller walks into his office and says, you cannot do the carve outs. That's not how this can work. Like, we have to go after all these places. It is where the illegal immigrants are. But I will say this. This is where industry believed that Trump was going to taco. Like, they did believe. I heard people say this. They're like, yeah, he'll probably do some things for the cameras, but, like, he's not really going to go raid all the chicken plants and all the things. Like, because it's, everybody knows it's too important to our economy. Yeah. And, like, this is the tension. The tension is, we have built an economic model on top of migrant labor. And so if you deport them, you are going to crater certain industries. And, like, Trump is getting that education in real time. It's not. And so anyway, but, like, then he's also learning that you can't just carve out this or that. Like, he would love to just do it in blue states. He would love to just do it in people who are his enemies and not his friends. But Tim is right that, like, a little bit of that could happen, but not at a mass scale. Like, you're doing it or you're not doing it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's only so many ICE agents, right? I mean,
what's Greg Abbott going to do? You think Greg Abbott's going to be like, no, we're not going to, and Ron DeSantis, you think they're going to get cucked and be like, no deportations in my state?
No, I think they get the best of all worlds. See, this is the thing, right? He can say no carve outs, but do carve outs in practice, right? That's the, what he shouldn't have done was said there were going to be carve outs. This was, you know, first rule of carve outs is you don't talk about carve outs. I mean, is Ron DeSantis going to be around? Hey, I want more ICE agents blowing up the economy in Jacksonville. And I demand, Mr. President, that you say, no, you just sit around and say, look at all those brown people getting hurt in California. Isn't that great? Doesn't it give you a chubby? And, you know, everybody here just move on like life is normal, because that's what all this is anyway. It's not lived experience. People are mad about something happening somewhere else and they want to see.
But that's not OK. That could have, but that's not happening. And I was literally just talking to somebody yesterday in Miami who was like, man, the Cubans are a little shook right now because, like, there have been raids in some of these Cuban neighborhoods. And, like, we've seen the news coverage of this. Like, here in Louisiana, I can't get a good answer for this. Trump's biggest donor's company was raided. So, like, again, emphasis, yes. They're going to emphasize great. LA. I know. Yeah. I'm for great. Awesome. Yeah, whatever. Not great for the actual people getting deported, but it's the business owners. That's an interesting wake-up call for you guys. Emphasis, I'm with you, but we're not really seeing it in practice, I guess.
Well, this is a real question, though. We don't have any aggregated data on this, do we?
That's true.
Right. And, you know, we are really hostage to, you know, wherever there's cell phone camera video of something happening.
Local news stories.
And local news stories, or, you know, like the Tufts grad student. Right. If there weren't people there who had camera footage of that happening, that story wouldn't have happened. Like, and so we don't know what the numbers on this are really like. And I wonder, like, when will we get those numbers? Could you trust those numbers? Like, you know, who's collecting them? How is that working? Where are these people going?
Yeah, but
like, answerable questions. But like, this is somehow I don't know we're going to get them.
No, they want that number to be as big as possible, right? Like Trump and Stephen Miller want that number. And so like, they can't, this is why Stephen Miller's yelling at everybody and saying, you got to go to Home Depot's. And the way that you know about how serious they are or not is you look at how much money there is being allocated to ICE versus other, right? Like they now have money and resources. It's becoming one of the bigger law enforcement agencies in the country. And so like, they're going to go look for people to round up. That's their job.
It's really something.
So here's the thing I think Trump could get away with. And it's somewhat related to another topic I know we're going to get to, Israel and Iran, but I'm interested in your guy, both your take on the PR side of this is, like, except for like the most strident people on any given issue, right? Like there's a small percentage of obsessives about any issue, you know, on immigration, Mark Krikorian or whatever, you know, who has founded an anti-immigrant nativist policy group, or on Iran, you know, it's going to be Tucker, obviously, on one side and Nikki Hill on the other, right? So like, we know who these people are. But except for like the 2% of most strident people, a lot of other people are just kind of taking this stuff in through their filters and through their bubbles. And Trump, I think, has more successfully than other politicians been able to kind of do stuff and then like get people on opposite sides of it to say he's doing what they want. And I think he's just very skilled at that. And so like, I've heard this on immigration. I've been listening to the fucking Tech Bro podcast, and they're like, see, Trump is pulling back on the immigrant stuff that's hurting the economy. And then on the like right wings, the ban on stuff, it's like, this is the most important thing Trump's doing. And on Iran, you saw this. It was like Ben Shapiro and Eric Erickson and those guys are like, Trump was a genius. He sat back and played good cop, and he played possum and tricked the Iranians. And then you have like the nationalist guys, like the Breaking Points guys being like, well, Trump, you know, looked good so far. Trump hasn't actually done anything there. And it was just the Israelis acting alone. And, right. Like he gets away with this better than other politicians do. And it's a tough nut to crack when you've got these like propaganda networks that no matter what you do, they're going to just say you're doing the best thing. So I don't know what you guys think about that.
So that's internal coalition management.
For sure.
Externally, is he still, I mean, we have some polling that we're going to talk about later. Maybe we should just talk about it now. It does look like he's in pretty precipitous decline. Like maybe his, you know, outside of the coalition, or maybe that's just wish casting on my part. I don't know. Sarah, what do you think? I
mean, are we going to get into the polling group, now? I've got a lot of,
we don't have to, but like, polling. You know, you're focused.
We'll talk about the PR element of it, and then we can talk about,
I'll just, on the polling, I think what's happening is, I don't think that he's in precipitous decline. I think that Trump was on a sugar high with a bunch of new voters in his coalition, many of whom were brought in to the coalition by some of the like Tulsi Gabbard, No More Wars, like almost people who were more lefty, right? Tim's point about how he is able to make everybody feel like he's on their side because Trump has created not just a media infrastructure around him, but an incentive structure for people to say, Trump, good. The thing Trump is doing is good. Mm-hmm. There is just a massive audience that wants to hear, like if the mainstream media is saying thing Trump doing is bad, that created an entire market around thing Trump doing is good. And so people now want to tell their audience that Trump is doing the thing that they like, both the host and the audience. And so there's an enormous incentive structure for people to do that. And so, but I think on the polling, Trump came in higher than Trump had ever been. And I actually think what we've seen is not precipitous decline, but he never cracked 45% in his first term. And I actually think what we're seeing is water finding its level in a bunch of the people who gave Trump a new chance for whatever reason, because they thought he was going to do something good for the economy, or they thought he was going to be anti-establishment and tear things down that they liked. Those people are the ones that drop first because they're new to the coalition. And so I actually think what we're seeing is him go back to the place where Trump was never very popular. He lived at 45%. And so for me, I'll say he's in precipitous decline when I see him in the Nate Silver aggregator start to be in the 30s and under where he lived in his first term.
Yeah. I mean, the precipitous is too much to say. I mean, there's been some decline. This is the weekly YouGov poll. 2 weeks ago, he was at -4. Last week, -9. This week, -13. I mean, it's like, you know, it's trending in a direction. And when you look at, you know, Hispanic voters, he's now underwater by 29 points. It's like a 24-point shift.
Yeah, and just to Sarah's point about the new voters and like who they are and what they're for different reasons. And like there are a couple of specific categories of people for whom they have specific reasons. So,
and it's these people with the big shifts.
Right.
Like, it's young people. It's Hispanics. It's black men.
Yeah, right. And so what are the, I mean, young people, what are the Hispanic?
-39, a 44-point shift.
Right. What do the Hispanic people mad about? Well, seems probably the mass deportations of random of their homes and people charging into their homes. And I think the Democrats probably overstated the idea that immigration is the most important issue to Hispanics and blah, blah, blah. But like once you start doing raids in the neighborhood and, you know, abuelas getting taken out in cuffs, like that's going to impact at least some percentage of Hispanic voters. And young voters are stupid and thought that Trump was going to be anti-war or whatever, right? So like all this stuff is getting worse, not better globally. And then the economy is like fine, but not getting better, right? Like it's not like it was a month ago where it looked like we might be on recession. He did taco on the economy stuff, but it's still, you know, if you're I think it was one of your focus groups, Sarah. I listened to one of your focus group competitors recently. I forget who, but I think it was in one of yours they were talking about going to this grocery store and just like shit is not
it's any not cheaper.
Cheaper, right? Like, and there is like another category of people for whom that was kind of an expectation, right? So like there are some distinct categories of people who are not like ideologically MAGA who have legit reasons to kind of come to bring, you know, to revert to the mean, if you will. So I think that's pretty easy to comprehend. I just want to
highlight this. So voters 18 to 29 in the first week of his term, Trump was +5 with them. So he was 48-43, approve, disapprove.
Yeah.
He's now -39. 27 approved, 66 disapproved.
Yeah, great job, youth. Appreciate it.
That's them being like, I don't know. I voted to Tim's point. Like, he was supposed to be anti-war and he's supposed to lower prices and like make housing cheaper. And he promised he was going to do it right away.
How could they possibly have known that he couldn't do
that? And I'm 20 years old and I don't know anything. And I thought he was going to be able to wave a magic wand and all of this was going to happen.
He was going to be the one that was going to end the Gaza war. Isn't it the Democrats that are the war candidate? Anyway, I would like to see our boy John Del Volpe and like a little deeper dive on the youth. You can. There's such a difference between like 18 to 22 year olds and 23 year olds or 29 year olds. You know what I mean? The makeup of that 18 to 29 might matter. Like that might not be that relevant of a group. So anyway, so it might not be quite as dramatic as that, though obviously there's been some bleed.
My only point is that I want to see us get below that 45 mark. Like the place where Trump lived before, getting him back down to that is, I think, kind of the easy part. The hard part is digging into that much more durable part that was very
sub 40, right? Get him down to 39, 37. That's right. Yeah. No, that's true. It is hard to get my whole house to eat the same thing. Nigh on impossible. It's even harder to find good quality seafood. You just never know about the quality you're getting when you're at the grocery store. Enter Wild Alaskan Company. Wild Alaskan Company is the best way to get wild-caught, perfectly portioned, nutrient-dense seafood delivered directly to your door. Trust me, you have not tasted fish this good. I am a tough customer when it comes to seafood. I have very particular tastes and exceedingly high standards. And let me tell you, the coho salmon and the Pacific cod from Wild Alaskan tasted like I was in a remote cabin up in Alaska, not grilling in the backyard from my Manhattan home, my brownstone, if you will. It's 100% wild caught. It's never farmed. This means there are no antibiotics or GMOs or additives, just clean, real fish that support healthy oceans and fishing communities. Wild Alaskan fish is frozen off the boat to lock in the taste, texture, and nutrients like omega-3s. Wild caught from Alaska, every order supports sustainable harvesting practices, and your membership delivers flexible shipments, expert tips, and truly feel-good seafood. If you're not completely satisfied with your first box, Wild Alaskan Company will give you a full refund, no questions asked, no risk, just high-quality seafood. Guys, this stuff is amazing. It is so good, I can't even tell you. We're not supposed to have favorite sponsors. We love all of our sponsors equally, but the Wild Alaskan Company is awesome, really awesome. Not all fish are the same. Get seafood you can trust. Go to wildalaskan.com/next level for 35% off your first box of premium wild-caught seafood. That's wildalaskan.com/next level for $35 off your first order. Thanks to Wild Alaskan Company, feeding my family, and for sponsoring this episode. All right, so yesterday, we're going to have to talk some New York City mayoral politics, but we'll get there via Brad Lander, who is like the normie lefty city comptroller who's running for mayor, and he got arrested by ICE yesterday.
He's kind of like in the Elizabeth Warren lane, if you will, in the primary.
Yeah.
That's not normie to me, just FYI.
No, normie lefty.
Yeah, normie lefty. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Zohran's in the Bernie lane. She's in the Elizabeth. Lander's in the Elizabeth Warren lane.
I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's at an immigration courthouse in Lower Manhattan. He was trying to escort an immigrant out of the building. He was arrested. What happened? We have good footage of this. There was a gaggle of men, none of whom, from what I could see in the pictures I saw, were wearing uniforms or badges. Who were trying to...
I saw a couple uniforms. It was a mix, just because it was like... There's like a man in a dark Spider-Man costume.
There's a guy in a full black, like latex mask.
Yeah, like a bank robbing outfit.
How is it possible that that's allowed? I want to talk about this mask thing. I'd also... There's some joke in here about the anti-mask, right? Suddenly loving their ICE agents to be all masked up. One of them is wearing like a COVID mask, so you can't see their faces. That is garbage. People should be up in arms about this idea that these people are arresting people while you can't see their faces.
Right.
And they weren't providing a warrant either.
So Brad Lander's asking them. He says, I'll let go when you show me a judicial warrant. He says his hand is on the body of his right hand is on the man who he's trying to protect. The Homeland Security claims that he assaulted, their word, law enforcement. There seems to be no evidence that he even touched law enforcement.
He was being assaulted, I would say.
Sure looks like he's being assaulted. I just want to throw this open to you. I am significantly to the left of you guys on the question of law enforcement, I think. You guys saw the picture that I put in our little show notes. You guys ready to come ride with me now? Sarah?
Boy, go to Sarah first, because I don't know. This might be my leftiest issue, but go ahead.
I'm definitely not ready to ride with you yet, because you have a very sort of broad anti-cop bias. I do think...
Not anti-cop. I'm pro-professional cop. Yeah. I want the professionalization of law enforcement.
Mm. And I agree. I agree with that. I think that the being masked, I think that the level of... Now, I will say, here's where maybe I differ from you. I think optically... Like what happened to Senator Padilla last week, I think was so jarring because it's authenticity, the authenticity of what was happening. Like he was genuinely in the middle of a question. He was identifying himself and he gets like put on the ground. And it really is like sort of stomach turning to watch because it feels very like this is the stuff that doesn't happen here. I would say this one, the way that they are, how aggressive they're being gives a similar vibe of, this makes me feel really uneasy. On the other hand, like he was doing a resisting thing, right? It was like, it was a stunt to, or like he was trying to get them to kind of, I think he was trying to get
act
arrested.
Professionally.
Right? Yeah. But
he was trying to act professionally.
He was asking them to show a warrant. That's a pretty common in any cops show that you watch. Show me a warrant.
Can I see your badge and a warrant, please, officer?
Hear me clearly on this. I get a little nervous if it starts to feel stunty, to people. Like, as an optic thing right now, I think Democrats, I think they are doing exactly the right, like, I think the way Padilla handled what happened to him in terms of how he went out with a press conference, how he talked about it on the Senate floor, how he implored his colleagues. Like, you want to persuade people that the way that these people are behaving is absolutely wrong. And so I just sometimes, like, there's a lot on the left where there's a lot of like sit-ins or things that are kind of can be performative to the point where you lose people's sympathy. And so I just,
I don't think this is one, is that case, do you, Brad Lander?
No, I just said, I want, yeah. I think, so I'll say in both cases, I, as an observer of this stuff, keep seeing a video where like people are in the scrum and you have no idea how it started. And I find commenting on things like that a little difficult. You and I were on TV together when the Padilla stuff happened. And so Nicole Wallace was showing the thing over and over again. And I was just aware as I was commenting that like, I'm not sure of what I'm seeing, like, because we didn't see what happened beforehand. So when they were saying he assaulted the cops, clearly what's happening and what we're seeing, he is not assaulting them. He's trying to hold on to the guy. Mm. They're assaulting him. But like, you don't know what happened before.
Well, if
that,
they had video of it, wouldn't they show it? That's kind of how I feel about the Venezuelans. Okay. Well, if he's a fucking terrorist, then let me see it. Show me if he was the makeup artist to the TDA stars, let's see the texts, right? I don't, you know.
And it's different
when it's
the law enforcement.
This is me wanting to be careful about this stuff.
No, I understand. But when the law enforcement organizations are making charge, like saying he assaulted law enforcement, right? When they're big, that is different than like a person making stuff up, right? Because you stand in for the state. Yeah. And the whole idea is like we always hold the state to the highest standard. And in fact, what we've got instead is that the state gets held to the lowest possible standard. And it's the people who go, well, you have to prove that he never touched anybody. You know, like, well, if you go from this angle, his pinky touches the. And I mean, honestly, what I want, I just want them to be in fucking uniforms with visible badge numbers so that there isn't any confusion.
I just want to talk about discretion.
Who is legitimate law enforcement or not, because otherwise somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, right? I just want to talk about discretion, though. Like the Biden administration got killed by the right. And showed a ton of discretion in all their political, investigations. Donald Trump was never fucking manhandled. He was never thrown to the ground. He was never handcuffed. He was indicted 4 times. He was never perp walked. He had to do one mugshot, right? But he got to come at his own time with his own airplane. Like, so there's discretion in all of these cases. Like this situation with Lander, this is why this pisses me off so much. And I'm sympathetic. I understand cops have a tough job. Okay. And so I do understand that, but like, there's no violent risk here. Like sometimes, to be generous to the cops, let me like go back to another situation. I feel like at times during like the heat of around Black Lives Matters, sometimes you're watching these videos and cops are acting very aggressive. And I was always instinctually like, fuck these guys, chill out, you know, where I would be reminded by my cop friends, like, you don't know what you're going into when you open the door of a car and somebody, you know what I mean? Like conceivably you could be in danger. And sometimes if a cop is scared, they're going to act a certain way. And that doesn't excuse all of cop behavior. I use that example to say that is not the case here or with Padilla. With Padilla, they're in a federal building. Okay, Padilla was escorted in by an FBI agent. There's no worry that this old Latino man is going to like pull a gat. Okay, everyone has to come through security to get into that building. Same with the building in this immigration court. Like they're in an immigration court in New York. It is a elected official. They knew it was an elected official. A local reporter said they heard them over talking between each other saying, should we arrest the comptroller? So they knew he was an elected official. And the person the elected official is protecting, the migrant, he's not protecting like a murderer. He's protecting somebody that's about to get deported for immigration crimes, like or immigration crime, right? Like for breaking into the country. So it's not as if these police, these masked agents, are like worried that there's a safety risk to the city, that they've got to detain this guy right now. Like, there's an easy case of discretion here that's like, look, if the comptroller is doing this, let's pull him into a private room. Hey, sir, if Brad Lander starts acting crazy and starts screaming, it's like, okay, you know, calm down, sir. Like, here is a deportation notice for your guy here. He's got to show up to X place in 3 days. And if he doesn't show up, we're going to come to his house, right? Like, there, like, and that's just one idea. There are a million different ways to handle this. And we now have a pattern of them deciding they want to do the roughest, most escalatory way possible. And that is what pisses me off about it.
Yeah, the thing about the escalating instead of de-escalating, it constantly looks like they're not doing yet like regular police stuff, where you are used to seeing police officers be kind of like even in their de-escalatory.
Calm down, sir. Could you calm down, please?
Yeah, right.
You know, I've gotten that once or twice in my teenage days, you know?
Yeah. And maybe you've seen more of it than I have, but like part of me was when I don't see the beginnings of these, I'm just so leery of like seeing snippets online about stuff without seeing the things that preceded them. And so if like they jump to that escalatory behavior,
what could be on the preceding thing? This is my point, though. They're in a courthouse. There's no weapons. Like what? They think Brad Lander is going to brandish a knife, or that he pushed
him? No, but if he pushed her, okay, or we would have seen that. Right?
You saw the picture of the scrum. I mean, everybody's got phones. There's 50 people there. If he was pushing a cop, we would have seen it by now. Again, I hear you on being cautious.
By now,
But my point is like, we're in a federal building. The migrant in question showed up to his court date. This is not like the cops going into El Chapo's fucking lair to get people that are drug dealers that are hiding from them. Like the dude showed up to his court hearing. He's with an elected official. Like we can chill out.
Sort of. So here's my only pushback to this, and then I'll stop, because I also heard from some cops after, you know, I was on Nicole, and I was like, I was very freaked out by what I saw from Padilla. And I also didn't understand why Kristi Noem, who I was quite certain would recognize the senator of the state that she's in, who'd been trying to get a meeting with her, right? And so I had said some things, but then I heard from some people I respected who are like, hey, if you're on a detail protecting like the Department of Homeland Security head, and somebody starts walking toward her at a time when like those cops are going to behave that way. And then also I was like, yeah, okay, fine. In the room, let's say, like, okay, they get him out of the room though. And now they're dragging the guy to the ground.
Yes.
And their point is like, what was different? He was like, well, it's different people outside the room. So if all you see is your people, right, you're not in the room. You see your people wrestling some guy out and you don't know what happened in the room, right? You're just going to operate from like, okay, we've got somebody who is resisting and we need to get them to the ground. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that. And actually, I did a lot of pushing back in these conversations. I will say it made me think about it from a slightly different angle. And all I'm saying,
if this was out
of
the blue in 2007, I would be much more sympathetic to that. The DHS's behavior, that's not the only data point, I guess, would be my point.
And I guess my response is they are escalating everywhere. And because they're doing that, my only thing is, and JVL and I talked about this in the secret pod, JVL is kind of like, shouldn't Newsom kind of go get in their face? And I think that there are ways in which people can sort of go on offense here. I just don't want it to I don't want it to start looking like a stunt that everybody's trying to like get in front of cameras doing this.
Can you imagine if the U.S. Capitol Police had taken these approaches to their work on January 6th, how many people would have died? Right? I mean, the Capitol Police did an amazing, amazing job not killing people and de-escalating. Even in this, there's that famous, was it Harry Dunn? Was he the one in the stairwell where there are guys charging and he is just like funneling the crowd around, right? He is not drawing his weapon and telling, respect my authority. You're not following my lawful orders. I'm going to, right?
And the very same people that are doing this thug shit now were out there calling the Capitol Police crybabies and talking about how inappropriate the way they treated what's-her-name, who
Ashley
like
Babbitt.
Ashley Babbitt, who crashed through the window. So it's just like, fuck these guys, I guess is my other point. I'm like, sorry, they have no credibility.
Again,
on any of this.
What I want is professionalized policing. The Capitol Police have always been like a really people who know in DC, like, no, that is a very professionalized group. FBI agents tend to be a highly professionalized group. What we have seen of ICE suggests very unprofessional behavior.
I want to add one other point to this. Again, if it was one off with Padilla, but now we have New Jersey, we have Lander. I had Ben Rhodes on this morning, and he said something to me that really struck me because he's written a lot about authoritarians in other countries, regardless of what you think about his foreign policy views and what America should do. Like, he's met with dissidents and knows them, and he's like, people say we're on the way to Hungary, and, you know, in some ways, Hungary, you know, Orban has taken power of institutions more successfully than Trump, but he's like, in this way? He's like, Orban there's no ICE police arresting Orban's opponents in Hungary. He's like, Orban's military is not in the street of the democratic town in Hungary. And he's like, so it's just in that. And I thought that was a pretty striking comment to like think about it that way. That, I mean, we'll see. And like, maybe it stomps now, but it's a pretty alarming series of data points between New Jersey, California, militarization of police, and now this in New York.
It's not great.
You know, do I love my cat? I don't know. I've come to accept the neighborhood cat that comes into the house because my husband and daughter love it. And when my daughter's happy, I'm happy. But sometimes a neighborhood cat brings some allergens, which makes my job as podcaster come into conflict with the job of being a good father. Because you don't want to be itching or sneezing in front of the camera. And that's why the show is sponsored by Packagen. Owning a cat doesn't have to mean endless itching and sneezing, yet almost 20% of people suffer from cat allergies, and 3 in 4 people aren't happy with their current solutions. Packagen's cat allergen neutralizing spray targets the allergens around your home that trigger your cat allergies and break them down so you and your family can live and breathe in peace. Cats groom themselves a lot, but did you know their saliva is the main source of the allergens that trigger your cat allergies? So grooming means your clean cat is now covered in allergens to shed across your home. Packagen's neutralizing spray uses their patent-pending whisker block, great name, protein, to bind and neutralize allergens in your home. No harsh chemicals, no side effects. Instead of taking some allergy medication, why don't you just target the allergens your pets are producing? Your pets, they're not just pets, they're family. So get the relief you need with Packagen. Head to packagen.com/thenextlevel for an extra 25% off your order and an exclusive gift for our listeners at checkout. That's PACAGEN.com/thenextlevel for an extra 25% off your order and an exclusive gift. One last time, that's packagen.com/thenextlevel for an extra 25% off and an exclusive gift auto-applied at checkout.
Can we talk about Zoran?
I'd love to.
So yesterday on FY Pod,
I wouldn't love
one
to
of the best
actually,
FY Pod. No, you don't want.
Maybe
to?
Maybe I think Harry Sisson talking about Harry Sisson's sex with the girls and that drama was probably the best one. He was sexting girls on Snapchat, and that created a stir on the internet. We hashed that out with him. It's great.
I enjoyed yesterday. I mean, did that episode have good twink, bad twink in it?
It did not. It did not.
Because I think the good twink, bad twink dynamic was really quite something.
Thank you.
So Tim had Zoran Mamdani on the show, the darling of the left, who is running second in the Democratic primary and has, I guess, an outside chance to pull off an enormous upset. He's 33. He's a Democratic socialist. Very charming. Very personable. Great hang. I'd love to hang out with him.
Great hang.
I don't think he should be mayor. That's okay. I am just curious as to what you're... I want to have like a discussion on the merits of Zoran first, and then a meta discussion about the reaction to the show afterwards.
All right.
And I guess, Sarah, do you want first dibs here at the pinata?
No, I think Tim needs to start and maybe set it up.
Sure. I will save the meta, which is what I would like to talk about, which is the meta discussion, which has driven me insane. And I got to tell you, there are certain issues that are tough to bring up on podcasts these days, because there's a category of people that are sure that they're right, and that makes it challenging to get into nuance. But I'll get to that in a second. As for Zharan himself, I'll say this. Well, first, it was such a Rorschach test, which I'm really practicing my interview skills, and I think that it's an interesting challenge for me to kind of learn how to do it. And so please take this humble brag in the spirit of which it's intended, which is that I'm trying to get better. Like, it was a real Rorschach test, which made me feel like I did a good job. Like, a lot of, like, I had people reply to me, be like, man, that made me like him better. And people be like, man, he sucks, actually. Yeah, and like, man, he's like, so I heard a very wide range of responses to his responses to my questions. Me personally, I also find him, he's charming. He's a good hang. I don't think he's as handsome as other people say, but that's neither here nor there. Here are the two positive things I can say. I genuinely want people to be excited about non-MAGA politicians. And I think that the Democrats have really struggled to generate politicians that generate excitement. And politics is about exciting people's part of politics. And it's possible that the Democrats will have to find somebody that does not have my ideological priors to excite the broad Democratic base. And I'm resigned to that. Maybe not. Maybe there'll be a very exciting Tim Miller style candidate. I hope so. But I think it's good. And I don't want to yuck people's yum if they're very excited about something. I think that that's better than apathy and like nihilism, which I see a lot of or in our circles. So that's the one nice thing I'll say. He's doing what I am asking Dems to do going forward, which is, he came onto my podcast. I was very explicit them about my views. They're like, what do you want to talk about? And I was like, my first question is going to be to try to convince me to rank him fifth, because that's the best he could possibly get for me. Like, so they knew that. They knew it was going to be kind of goofy, because we had the Gen Z vibe on it, and he did that, and he was natural, and he was like, he was able to kind of hang and go back and forth, and I think that going forward, Democrats should do that. We invited Andrew Cuomo, who is fucking awful across every metric, by the way. Like, as a governor, he was awful. As a manager, he seems like a bad person. We invited him on. He's not doing any of those interviews, and I don't think he should be rewarded for that. So that is the other positive thing I'll say. As far as like whether he'd be a good mayor, I felt like he was trying hard to try to find things to appeal to our folks on. Like, there's lip service to YIMBY stuff. There's lip service to cutting red tape. There's lip service to making government work. But like, listening to the preponderance of the interview, did it seem like somebody that was really going to fight the interest groups, the lefty interest groups, to get any of that stuff done? Not really to me. Like, I gave him a chance to criticize Brandon Johnson, who's the mayor of Chicago, who's doing an awful job. Everybody hates him, basically. He didn't do it. I asked him to try to distance himself from the more extreme parts of the protesters. Didn't really do that. So that part left me less optimistic about him as mayor. So that would be what I would say about Zohran. It's a shitty situation. I guess the last thing I'd say about New Yorkers, because I don't like the idea that you have to choose. Like, if it gets me back to like the binary choice, sometimes I feel like, yeah, I'm in like the anti place where it's like where I was always saying to people, it is a binary choice. You have to choose. It's either Trump or whatever. And Zohran, people use that as like, it's a binary choice. It's either him or Cuomo. And like, there's something to be said for that, I guess. I don't live in New York, so I don't have to make the binary choice. I'd rank Zellner Myrie first, but that's just me. So that's my take.
Can I make a limited case for why I think people are excited for him?
Sure.
I don't love it myself, but before we throw to Sarah, the rest of the field is so underwhelming, and underwhelming from, like, you know, the formerly Democratic incumbent mayor who should be in jail, but who isn't because he sucked up to Donald Trump, to Andrew Cuomo, who's a creep and incompetent. Having a guy who seems like, on a personal level, is not corrupt, who has a positive vision, loves New York, who says like, oh, we can make things better. Not like, hey, we're just going to mitigate harm. We can do better. I can see where that's powerful, right? I mean, you look at it and say, yes, can't we try to have nice things? Can we try to have nice things, please?
Yeah.
And I get why people would.
He started with that with me when I was asking, like, can't we make the metro? Can't we make the subway better? Can't people have free buses? Why not? Like, that's doable. Why do we have to listen to people who are like, no, because we have a corrupt establishment that can't do anything? There's something to appeal to that for sure.
Where I fall apart is very few of the things he was talking about with you seem practical. Like, I am sorry. The legacy, New York is like the largest legacy system of any kind in America. The city of New York is. And in order to do anything, forget trying to make things better, just in order to keep things going as they are with, you know, duct tape and chewing gum wrappers requires kind of a lot of expertise. And like, you just have to understand the system and have how it actually works now. Like, having been in the state assembly for 5 years is simply not adequate preparation to understand. Like, you know, you're going to walk in there. This guy, if he were mayor, would spend the first 2 years just learning how everything works.
Yeah.
And I this is going to sound like, you know, anti-young, like, I guess, but it is like a really hands-on job. It's a really hands-on job. And it really helps to have, I don't know, at least a decade's worth of experience with the system itself and understanding what it is and how it works to be able to do it. And that said, I would be all for rolling the dice on a guy like Zohran in like in a normal political environment. Hell, like, you know, if it was 2004 and I lived in New York, I might have been like, and this was the field, right? And then I would be like, yeah, what the hell? You know, you give it a try. If worse comes to worse in 4 years, then so be it. The problem is that if he's elected mayor and something bad happens in New York under his watch, that's going to be used against Democrats for the next 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
And so there is a national political downside to Zohran winning. Now, there's upside, too, right? Like, you know, maybe he gets elected mayor and he's great. Maybe he's the new LaGuardia or something.
Nice.
But I think the odds of that are reasonably low. And if he isn't, if things are bad, then that's going to be used to hurt Democrats across the country. And that worries me. Sarah?
I don't care for this young man in the least. I would rank
him. Not even personally?
I would leave him off my ranking. Actually, no. I think that somebody who talks about globalizing the Antifada and does it in a charming way, I don't think there's anything worse, actually.
Well, he didn't. Did you listen to him?
Yeah.
I mean, I asked him about it. He didn't. Yeah. And he didn't bring it up. And I.
No, yeah. you asked if that kind of language made him uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then he went on a thing about how, no, this is actually just about, this is just, which the Holocaust Museum is now actively disputing this, but yeah. He went on this thing about how they changed the meaning of what Antifada means. It just means struggle and whatever. And I'm like, that's not what people. People don't know that didactic, you know, clarification. They think this is about like the destruction of Israel, you know. And I thought that admission from him, I hope, is good to know from people. I mean, and that's just on top of the fact that every idea he has to me is like not just a young guy who's a little inexperienced. Like they're idiotic. Like idiotic. Like we're going to federalize the grocery stores and like him moving into the abundance stuff is like clearly him having like, oh, I'm just going to change my entire frame. I'm just going to bounce around. Like I just thought he went from somebody who was silly, that no one should take seriously to somebody who was saying things that I actually thought were quite dark, dangerous and anti-Semitic. Yeah, didn't care for him one bit. And him being a great hang matters very little to me.
Well, I'm not saying it matters to me in terms of like
voting
in politics.
I mean, I guess it does actually matter to the Democrats put forth people that are good hangs because they've pretty much failed to do that for about a decade and a half now. So and that's led to two Donald Trump presidencies. So Anyway, but if
their ideas are toxic,
well, sure.
If they have toxic ideas and charming ideas, personalities.
Just talk about the value of it. I don't like Zoran and he'd not be on my ballot. So I don't really know what the hostility is. So I hate to have to defend him, but and he did say that I asked him directly about the grocery stores and all the things you don't like about him that I asked him about directly. I asked him about the grocery stores and he was like, well, it's a 5-store pilot. And if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. And I was like, okay, great. That's not going to work. But is a 5-store pilot that big of a deal in the context of the fact that the city is already subsidizing other fucking grocery stores and giving, private grocery store owners $100 million to subsidize their shitty grocery stores? Could we run them better? Should we try that? I don't know. That's not a crazy idea. I don't know. The government probably shouldn't be subsidizing grocery stores at all, but he didn't say we're federalizing the grocery stores. And also on the globalizing the Intifada answer, which was awful,
bad.
He began by talking about how Jewish people feel scared. I'm against anti-Semitism. Da da da. I mean, again, his answer was really bad. Brad Lander was given the same question a couple weeks ago by Josh Kroshauer, answered it much better. So he should have been prepared for the question since it was asked at a different, whatever you call it, not a debate, but a forum. And Brad Lander gave a much better answer a couple weeks ago. So he should have been prepared for it. It was a bad answer, but
I was more bothered by he talked about redoing the way in which zoning decisions are made. Right. And zoning decisions are now really disaggregated across the city so that every alderman or whatever has the power to set zoning or other. And he's like, yeah, we should change that so we could have a citywide zoning policy. I was like, okay. Sure. Who do you think is going to give up their power over local zoning? How do you get from here to there? Right. You have this system which affords enormous power to the most local politicians, and it would be beneficial to the city for those politicians to not have that power, but you're going to persuade. How do you get from there to there? On the policing stuff, I am so in favor of taking social services work out of the hands of police for all the reasons that Mamdani said. I think they all make total sense. It's very expensive. How are you going to pay for that?
Yeah.
Those are the,
They're doing it in Oregon, though, JVL. It's working.
They're doing it in Oregon. And I was like, I'm sorry. You could fit Oregon into one, Queens, right? Yeah. And anyway, so I just heard that. I just thought, this is not going to work.
He's also running, the Cuomo thing. Cuomo won't come on the podcast. I have plenty of questions for him to give him opportunities for the folks that are very excited about Andrew Cuomo. And are upset about my platforming. We've asked Andrew Cuomo to come on the podcast. He said no. He won't do it. He won't do any interviews. He sued to see the gynecological records of the women that he assaulted. And he's also a shitty fucking mayor. He was he's the worst governor in the country, maybe, on COVID, besides DeSantis on the long end on the long tail. DeSantis might have ended up being worse. He's the worst governor in the country. And he's also not good on the ideas of cutting red tape or reforming the government or whatever. And he's like a machine fucking hack liberal that we hated our entire lives. So anyway, it's not a great choice. And I just think that I get a little frustrated with the people that are stridently in my mentions on one side or the other, both being like, how could you fucking platform this guy that might be mayor of New York? And on the other side, it's like, how could you not rank him over Cuomo? It's like, I don't know. Both choices really fucking suck, actually. And so it's a tough choice.
Life is the guy who founded a vigilante organization.
Yeah.
It's not even you could say
the mayor's a criminal.
Oh, and the Republicans have a local businessman who has no chance to win, but he's sensible. The Republicans nominated just an insane talk radio host / vigilante.
Yeah. Right.
So the whole thing is really, really bad and a sign of enormous political dysfunction totally across the board in New York City.
Yeah, I think that was one of my big takeaways was New York is really screwed because I don't my disdain for Zoran is completely independent of my political judgment around the race. It's not because I don't like him because I really like Cuomo. No, I think Cuomo is a huge scumbag. And I actually think that the only good choices are people who are polling at 2% that no one even seems to have looked at or cared about, which is very disappointing. But I think we should have the platforming conversation because now that I've said my piece about how I feel about him, as a person, I'm going to defend Tim talking to him.
Great. Well, before you defend me, which I appreciate that, let me just give people the context. Let's just say anytime the issue of Israel and Gaza comes up, there's a very intense response from people on both sides. And I get
both sides.
Yeah, I too. Sorry to do the both sides.
We are a bunch of neocon shills who don't care at all about dead children and do nothing but support Zionism no matter what. And then.
And I mentioned this in this context because it's fun. This is funny to me and frustrating, but also funny. It relates to the platforming conversation, which is like, I will mention that I have concerns about the humanitarian issues in Gaza, and that does no good for me because my inbox then gets flooded with pro-Gaza activist types who are upset I don't talk about it more, or that my language was not perfect with regards to the scale of the destruction. And then I also simultaneously get messages from my pro-Israel friends who are mad I even mentioned that and talked about how October 7th was so horrible they should get to do whatever they want. And it's like, you know, so there's no winning with people who are who have very strong views on either side of that issue. And I think it's a very complex issue. I laid this out at the beginning of the Zohran podcast, actually, like for like 5 minutes, how like this is an issue where I'm very torn in a lot of ways. And I have humanitarian sympathies and blah, blah. Anyway, you can go listen to that if they want. Now, specifically about Zohran, like the most insane reaction of all has come from the pro-Israel right, the folks that we used to be aligned with, who are kind of Trump, cautiously pro-Trump, whatever, reluctant Trumpers, the reluctant Trump crowd and the pro-Israel right, who simultaneously are spamming me about how I'm terrible for platforming Zohran, as sounding like the most insane far-left woke libs on campus who are like, you can't invite anyone onto my campus who has a wrong talk. You know, so it's like these free, like, stifling speech, anti-speech, like, you know, attacks for even having Zohran on, and then simultaneously using the conversation for their ends to oppose Zohran, which is, I was like, this is negatively polarizing me into being pro Zohran. And it's literally just like me giving them a hand job. I was like, I gave you guys a hand job with this question about globalizing the Intifada, and I pressed him on it. I didn't just give him a question. I pushed him on it. I gave you guys a ham job, and your response is, fuck you, you didn't give me a blow job. And I'm like, no, fuck you. I gave you a hand job. What do you want? And so anyway, that I have a broad thoughts on who I will and won't platform, but I feel like it's very childish and absurd, the idea that you should not platform the guy that is the second most likely person to be the next mayor of New York City and ask him hard questions.
So let me defend you by pushing back on your own framing about what you did. Right. Platforming is what Ben Shapiro did with raging anti-Semite Candace Owens. That is platforming. Platform is when you take the Daily Wire and you help build an audience for somebody like Candace Owens. That's platforming. What you did, as best I could tell, was an interview. Now, people interview all manner of people with whom they have no intellectual fidelity, right? They're not, you interview people because they are somebody of repute, or not repute, notable,
news value,
right? Yeah. They have news value, and you want to know more about them. And so your particular kind of analogy aside, what you were doing is conducting an interview in which you asked a difficult question, and I thought I struggled with Cam, but Tim was behaving in an incredulous way, right? He's asking a difficult question. He's not just like accepting it. He's pushing back, and it's the reason, as Tim notes, that now everybody has this soundbite from him, basically giving some mealy-mouthed garbage answer on what globalized the Intifada means. And I think, for me, that was disqualifying for him. And I agree with Tim, sort of like, you're welcome, people who want a hammer to hit this guy with. And so the idea that
they're using the hammer, they're hitting me.
Yeah, well, this is to me the difference between interviewing and platforming are two different things. And platforming is someone who like maybe doesn't have a huge following, or people don't know, or you don't have, that doesn't necessarily have news value, and you're elevating that person. Like Tucker Carlson platforms people.
Like historian that nobody'd ever heard of who thought Churchill was the bad guy in World War II. It's like, I wouldn't have him on the pod. It's like, doesn't make a lot of sense to bring in random niche historians who think Hitler was great.
Okay, who had Nick Fuentes, you know, and like Donald Trump having Nick Fuentes to dinner at Mar-a-Lago and giving him credibility is what platforming is. Taking somebody who is could very well be the next mayor of New York. This is where I defended Caitlin Collins when she had the thing with Trump, the town hall, right? Like I was against them stacking it with Trumpers in the audience, but like, what was she supposed to do? The guy was very likely going to be one of the top nominees for president. Like, you have to interview people. And this idea that people are against having the conversations is ridiculous, and also is sort of not what the it's the right behaving, like they always say the left behaves, which is like, oh, snowflakes, you can't take a tough conversation where we disagree. Like, no, okay. Like, no, he had a tough conversation and made it clear he disagreed with him. So
yeah, great. Tough.
Seems like an interview. That's my defense.
Thank you. I appreciate that defense. I don't know, JBL, your thought, and sometimes we've disagreed a little bit on platform. I mean, like, my view on the whole conversation is deplatforming random people I'm for. Like, Milo got really hurt by being deplatformed. That was an example of it working. There was a big discussion back and forth. I think JBL and I were on opposite sides of this one. Where about like the Trump deplatforming, like that didn't work out. Turned out that maybe helped Trump actually in retrospect. There's a huge gap between Trump and Milo, and there are some edge calls, but like anybody that is influential already, like you're not platforming them by giving them a challenging interview. You're engaging with them and challenging their views. Like that's fine. And we should be able to do that in a liberal democracy and in a society and on this pod and on a podcast. My rule for the podcast, which is maybe unique, separate from the question of platforming, is I only want to have people on that tell me what they really think. So that means that there are certain people I won't platform because they're full shit. Right. And I'm like, I don't get much value in that. That over indexes currently on the right for a lot of people who, when they do interviews, they pretend they suspend disbelief to make arguments on behalf of Trump that they don't even believe. I don't see much point in engaging with that. I'm not going to do it. But if you really believe what you're saying, and by the way, there are a few people on our side that I'm not having on the podcast because I feel like they fail that category. And if you believe what you're saying, I want to have more disagreements. Like, it's like absurd to like have on, like what? I'm supposed to like only have on Tom Nichols over and over again? Becomes a pretty boring podcast. You know, I got to do it every day. like what
no
the fuck do you people
to Tom.
Want?
No shame to Tom. Very interesting.
Love Tom. He's great. But it's just like, I have, for my own sanity, I require having people on the pod with a wide array of views I disagree with. I wish more right-wing people would come on. I've invited every single Republican member of Congress onto the podcast several times. None of them want to do it, because they can't like handle the smoke. So, which takes me back to the one compliment I offered Zohran, which is he was willing to do it, eyes wide open of the fact that I am not a fan of him and was not going to be he was not even possibly going to be in the top four on my imaginary ballot. So there you go. I don't know, JVL, was there any of that you disagreed with in the platforming conversation?
No, none. So when we have talked about platforming, typically you and I have been on the opposite sides. I don't really think we're on the opposite sides. I think we're mostly aligned. My concern is always allowing something to be turned into propaganda. And so I feel like those of us who own platforms like The Bulwark have an obligation to prevent what we do from being turned into propaganda. And so that's why I wouldn't have Scott, what's his face from CNN on
Jennings,
right? Because Scott Jennings, because as you said, like he'll just never say something honest. Like you just know that he's working in bad faith. Why present him? I would not have Donald Trump on to do a live conversation. right? Because live, this was my thing about the town hall, right? Like I thought like you got to have him on tape, right? You have taped interviews so that you can like do what Jonathan Swan did, like have all the receipts with you, right? It's why I chafe a little bit at the New York Times sending Ross Douthat to interview J.D. Vance. Because Ross is just there to slobber all over J.D.'s knob. Like there's no, you know, that is essentially just propaganda. There's almost no news value going on in the two of them having a conversation. But that's not what you did. And I really don't understand. I don't understand why anybody would be upset. Because if Zoran had gone on the Hannity show and gotten pinched with that question, all of the people who are mad at you would be thrilled that Hannity got him.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, and for sure. No, this is about me.
Yes!
It's about me.
Sean got him!
It's about me.
It is. It's,
and the, it's about the bulwark.
Right. It is about the bulwark.
It's like a former family fight, whatever, which I don't really care about.
So it's not really a good faith. Like, it isn't actually about platforming. It's not actually about any of that stuff.
Again, and that's why you didn't platform him. You conducted an interview.
Right. And so that's why I don't really take any of those criticisms seriously. Right. I mean, these people should, as
I don't either. I do think it's funny though.
The bulwark got this guy to reveal himself.
Yeah, I don't make tickets serious either, but I do enjoy to mocking them about the fact that they're like literally using the most cringe rhetoric of the most far left woke height of the height of the social justice movement type rhetoric about how you can't talk to anybody who has a bad thought.
Yeah.
All right, I'm super excited about this sponsor because I love wine. You ever walk into a store and have no idea what wine to get? Me too. I've stopped wasting time at the grocery store staring at a giant wall of wine and not knowing what to pick, which is why I love our next sponsor, Naked Wines. It's 2025, guys, so why do you still shop for wine like it's 2005? Naked Wines is a service that directly connects you to the world's finest independent winemakers so you can get award-winning wine delivered straight to your door. Use our code THENEXTLEVEL for the code and password at nakedwines.com and get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. At the end of the workday, I hang out with my team here and try to like turn off the political news. And Naked Wines is all over our office and it has become the perfect beverage to pair with that end of the day wine down, if you will. And we don't have to choose between red and white because Naked Wines allows you to mix and match. Because I got people here who will only drink white. I, myself, am a red drinker. My favorites are Pinot Noirs and Cabernets, if you're interested. Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard-to-your-door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in-store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs and markups, winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on the quality, because nobody wants a low-quality wine. Naked Wines has been around for 15 years and funds over 90 independent winemakers around the world. With no commitments or membership fees, you can enjoy Naked Wines hassle-free. And don't forget, you can pause or cancel at any time. So just because you've got a trip coming up doesn't mean you can't enjoy Naked Wines before or after that much needed vacation. Now is the time to join the Naked Wine community. Head to nakedwines.com/thenextlevel. Click enter voucher and put in my code, THENEXTLEVEL, for both the code and password for 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off your first 6 bottles at nakedwines.com/thenextlevel and use code and password THENEXTLEVEL for 6 bottles of wine for $39.99. What a deal. Go do it.
All right, listen, we are running super long.
Are we?
We're only halfway through the show map. So I'm going to, we have one topic left. I'm going to cut everything into one topic. You guys choose Iran or Mike Lee.
I mean, I've covered Iran a lot and I had Ben Rhodes on today. I'm going to have SE Cup on tomorrow. We'll have very different views on Iran. We'll discuss with both of them. And so I'm fine. And I've also talked about Mike Lee a lot. So I guess Sarah, this is your call.
Sarah's choice. You pick.
Ooh, You know, the Mike Lee thing probably has been overly hashed over. I'm happy to do a Ron because I think that the inner MAGA crack up is pretty, pretty interesting and a rich vein of discussion. But if I could just say real quickly, and also I did Mike Lee on TV yesterday, but I just want to say, screw Mike Lee. you're a trash person. And this is what Donald Trump has. I just hate the way people have decided to be this awful in the face of tragedy. I just really, this is the stuff that I lament more than anything. And I think when JVL and I have our arguments about voters and our elected officials, the United States Senate and the United States Senate are behaving this way and setting this kind of example. I don't know. It is just so rotten. Also, when I was on TV yesterday, the only reason I want to say it is that I misnamed Tina Smith, Senator Tina Smith, who is the one named who her? Called. No, I just kept, you know why? Tina Peters. Tina Brown. No, Tina Peters is like from 2022, ooh, the crazy right-wing person who was like got arrested for messing with the machines.
Yeah, in Colorado. I wrote a great story on that. She you was did. Out in Grand Junction.
And for whatever reason, Tina Peters is locked in my brain. And so I kept saying Senator Peters. And at some point, Nicole was like, Senator Tina Smith. Yeah. Like, I don't know who Longwell's talking
Gary
about.
Gary Peters. There was also
Gary Peters. I was doing something in my brain. But a good on her. Good on her for walking up face to face and saying, hey, that was a miserable, wrong, indecent thing to do. And you should knock it off. And it he deleted them. And I think it shows the value of the direct confrontation in a way that is in the vein of the have you no decency, sir. So good on her. Anyway, Iran. Amen. Sorry.
Now you have to go on Iran too. It's back to you. Which part of the Iran?
Where are my neocons at?
I just want to talk about the Tucker Carlson Ted Cruz interview, two-minute snippet that's out there.
Okay, go ahead. I have not seen it.
What?
I haven't
this is great content from two people who are horrible in their own ways.
You have to choose between Cuomo and Zohran and between Ted Cruz and Tucker. Actually, you've got to rank all four of them right now. Rank
it's a
choice
binary
voting.
Choice, Sarah.
Go. Sarah Longwell, putting this on TikTok. Rank choice voting. Zohran, Cuomo, Tucker, and Ted Cruz.
Cuomo. Cruz, Zohran, Tucker.
Wow.
This is why I'm a good interviewer. I can't believe I got you to do that right there.
It's like being like, yeah, I don't know. This is the shit sandwich or chew on glass thing, and maybe drink Drano is number three. Like, whatever. These are all the worst types of people. But the funny thing is that watching Tucker do his insane Tucker thing where he came in loaded with, I'm going to quiz Senator Cruz. So he's like, you want to bomb Iran? How many people live in Iran? And Cruz is like, I don't know. He's like, what? You want to destroy this country and you don't know the population of Iran? And then he's like, what are the major sects? SECT. And he's like, and you could see Ted Cruz kind of being like, there's Persians and Tucker's like, no. And it is like he humiliates Ted Cruz, but also humiliates him in a way.
Did
that
he
was
do
just
this
like,
on Fox once?
It was like a pop quiz of things that are, to be fair, who knows how many people are in Iran? Like, I don't know. I guess I don't normally expect Ted Cruz to know, but it's a good I can't wait to watch it at 2, actually, because it will embody the two very distinct sectors of MAGA, the Tucker, Steve Bannon MAGA that is like, and this is why Tulsi came into the coalition. Right, is the end forever wars types. Tucker Carlson, who got his start at the Neocon Weekly Standard, where JBL also came from, and our Bill Kristol. Tucker Carlson is now no forever wars, no wars in general. We shouldn't do anything that's not in America's interest. Caught between like long-standing Republican canon of Iran cannot have nuclear weapons. A lot of these hostile Middle Eastern countries that are trying to get nuclear weapons cannot have them. We have to do something. We have to support Israel, whatever.
Must but also Israel, right?
The other part was Tucker got Ted Cruz and Ted was like, we are taking out Iran. He's like, are we at war? Are we breaking news? Are we at war? And he's like, well, Israel. Ted's like, well, Israel's taking out. Right. He's like, well, you said we said, and he's like, well, we're supporting Iran. And Tucker's like, oh, so we are at war. We are helping. It was like, it is batshit crazy. And I am going to get some popcorn and watch it. This show is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like leaving your laptop unattended at the coffee shop while you run to the bathroom. Don't do that. Most of the time, you're probably fine, but what if one day you come out of the bathroom and your laptop is gone? Every time you connect to an unencrypted network in cafes, hotels, airports, etc., your online data is not secure. Any hackers on the same network can gain access to and steal your personal data. Passwords, bank logins, credit card details, etc. It's super secure. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. So that's probably not going to happen. It works on all devices, phones, laptops, tablets, and more, so you can stay secure on the go. Safeguarding personal data and personal security is never far from my mind, and it shouldn't be far from yours. This is the kind of thing that feels really easy to ignore until you get burned. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/thenextlevel. That's expressvpn.com/thenextlevel to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months free. expressvpn.com/thenextlevel.
The Tulsi subplot is the better one for me. Okay. Like, have you seen the Politico story from last night?
Yeah, I have. It's great.
It is really delicious. And it was like Tulsi did this creepy 3-minute video about a nuclear bomb hitting San Francisco. And Sam and I did a YouTube kind of analyzing it. And we're like, what is this? Like, what's behind this? Like, is this a Russian? Is this a pro-Russia thing? Is this like, does she want to have a future career? Like, she's looking at her future career as a announcer. Like, what is happening? And the Politico story sheds a little light on it, which is that like, Trump saw it as a pushback on him.
Yeah, like shot across the bow.
Yeah, and was pissed about it. Like, because he saw it as kind of like a be careful with what's happening in Israel right now message. And so that was delicious. And then you have the fact that she said 3 months ago that Iran's not actually close to a nuclear weapon, which goes against their arguments. For bombing them right now, which is delicious. But the most delicious little subplot is just the JD part of it. And JD's like kind of hanging out in there. Like, oh, he was on Twitter and he was like, well, when Tulsi made that comment, it was 3 months ago and a lot has changed. But like, from the inside, I can see the nuance of this closer than you guys can from the outside. And it's just like, JD is squirming right now, like trying to find where to land. And the Tulsi and JD element is what I'm watching the most closely.
Well, so I brought up the Ted Cruz thing just because I think it's funny. Yeah. And I think the Tulsi thing, you're right, is like, it is a delicious subplot. But I want to go big picture for a second, because this like Trump flip-flop on U.S. interventionism is not like a flip-flop on a foreign policy decision. Okay? It strikes at the heart of the whole MAGA ethos, right? It is the uniparty establishment that has been selling out America and can be blamed for the destruction of the country, right? The wars in the Middle East are this prime example of the failures of the establishment that caused the deaths of Americans for nothing. Okay. Like this is essential to MAGA. And this is why there's like the neocons and the warmongers and the elites and the establishment and the uniparty. They're all basically synonymous with each other in MAGA speak, right? And Trump has spent 10 years channeling that anti-establishment rage that like can't be divorced from the forever wars.
Right.
This is like, he has been doing this. This is who Trump is. And so now, like, seemingly out of nowhere to them, Trump wants to get involved with regime change. Like, what this is wild to them. And this is, and to me, this is like an interesting difference between Trump 1.0 and Trump 2.0, because Trump 2.0 has been dominated by like this phenomenon right here. Trump says a ton of crazy things on the campaign trail. Tariffs, mass deportations, ending wars, bringing down prices on day one. And these are all either bad policies, right? So tariffs, deportation, or actually impossible. End all wars, bring down prices on day one. But Trump 2.0, unlike Trump 1.0, has an administration that will try to carry out all of the crazy things that Trump wants to do. Like those people are in place, but Trump keeps running into the fact that they're actually bad ideas. Yeah. Like when he learns about them, he's like, that's why he tacos. He tacos because he's like, oh, the tariffs are crashing the economy. And so
it goes back to my old take that good people never should have went into Trump 1.0.
Yeah. If we just learned the lesson the first time around. Yeah. So I think that it's interesting that this, unlike the big lie, unlike anything else you thought could really fracture the coalition, it turns out that I've always really wanted to sort of wedge off, you know, the 30% who don't think the election was stolen, who might like Nikki Haley, who might be normal. But actually, like, the better wedge is in the, no, he's a big, tough guy who's going to take out Iran and defend Israel. Or, no, he said he was going to end the forever wars. And for JVL's point about how Trump can be both things to both people, I do not think in this case he can be.
So that's a really good question, because I think he can. Not positive of it. I think he can. The people who are most wedded to the peacenik dove aspect of this America First stuff, I don't know how much of that really exists organically on the ground. It exists at the elite level among people who have very close ties to Russia.
The young MAGAs, it does.
Maybe, but those people aren't going to be Trumpers anyway. I mean, they're already gone, right? As we just saw from the
poll. I'm sure they're gone.
They're pretty gone. I mean,
but they're disillusioned. You know, yeah.
They're disillusioned already and had nothing to do with this. I look at this, you know, like Tulsi, Tucker, very Russia friendly.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Russia is honestly a big part of the Iran story, and it's like lurking right there. But if the U.S. doesn't put any troops on the ground, and it won't, if, you know, everything is done sort of from a remove, I think these people are going to realize, whatever, we wish he didn't do it, because we really don't like Israel and the Jews, although we pretend to like them as much as we have to. But this will all be over in a month, and he'll still be getting rid of the brown people. And that's...
Yeah, I think the argument...
I just think it'll be that simple.
Yeah, right? The argument that he can get away with it is that the people most likely to bail on him over it, like, are probably the least gettable people for Democrats.
Yeah, right? Like, where are they going to go?
I got a Tucker, you know, if you're an isolationist MAGA deportation person and you're mad at him over this, okay, but like, where are you going to go?
And there used to be people like that on the left, right? Yeah. And because of the horseshoe, those people are all, it's like anti-vaxxers. Those people are all gone from the left now. You know, they've joined up with MAGA and
so,
MAHA.
So can I tell you like where
Molly,
I think
Molly squared this. Did you see that?
Molly did square it, but you know who's not? So like, and this is not me. I'm not one. Remember the people who, when Elon went rogue on Trump, were like, "We need to get Elon in the tent." Whatever. Like,
well, I do remember that. Same
people. Yeah. So I'm not suggesting that at all about Joe Rogan, but I will say like Joe Rogan has been just like tiptoeing backward from Trump lately, and I think like these people who are red pilled. Many of them were red pilled because of things like this. They're genuinely isolationist, or against the wars, whatever. Like, I just want peace. And this is like the old neocons where you get mugged by reality. Like, the world is a hostile place where, like, sometimes America has to show leadership, which doesn't mean we have to be steeped in adventurism or regime chains. Although, hey, did you see Nikki Haley? Nikki Haley came out and was like, Donald Trump should not do regime change. Like, oh my God, he's out hawking Nikki Haley. Sorry, say the Molly Hemingway thing.
No, she just, you know, she just, you know, she was, before Trump said anything, she thought she was able to brush him back. And then he, you know, did his thing where he was like, yeah, maybe I am into this. And, you know, she went on Fox and was like, you know, this is a long standing thing is that Iran can't have nuclear weapons. And so that's really what this is all about. And I just, here's the thing. So Michael Shearer from The Atlantic talked with Trump and he asked him who gets to decide what America First means. And Trump said to him, well, considering that I'm the one that developed America First and considering that the term wasn't used until I came along, I think I'm the one that decides that.
Okay,
I think he's right.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Well, everything he said was wrong up until the very last part.
Right.
Like, I think I'm the one that decides that. Like, it was not, obviously, America First existed before him, and he's a liar and full shit. But I also think he's the one that decides that. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there can be fissures that, like, the majority, it won't be like a Bush-level fissure, I guess is my point. Like, there can be small fissures, but I think that
what is interesting to, so here's the thing that is most interesting to me in this is J.D., so J.D. Vance, for the second time in a fight, second time in like 2 weeks, he sort of came out to Trump's defense. And he did it by talking about how Trump has earned the benefit of the doubt. That to me, if I'm Donald Trump, that sounds like a guy who's ready to turn on you and who is not sufficiently loyal. And, you know, couching your support as in like, well, he's to us, it might look like he's wrong, but I guess he's earned the benefit of the doubt for now. Right. And that looks like a guy who's eyeing your seat and who is not going to be willing to defer to Don Jr. or whoever. And I do wonder at some point if Trump just decides that JD is going to get the Pence treatment. Maybe not, right? Maybe JD is, but I'm shocked. I don't know if you guys are, that JD be willing to not hug him as tight as he should in moments like this, because he did with this and with the Elon thing. Like, push came to shove, and instead of just like hugging on to Trump, JD tried to be clever and cute. And did that strike you guys at all, or do you think it goes unnoticed?
I'm monitoring it. I would say I don't know. Yeah,
I read it differently than you did. I read it as J.D. Vance, like, they were like, go give him some cover on this with your people. And he did.
Okay.
Like,
maybe that's true.
Yeah, I'm reconsidering the read on it. But just like my gut level read was like, everybody knows that J.D. Vance has because he did do a halfway defense of Tulsi a little bit there. Right. And so that to me is like, these are his people, and this is how you hold the coalition together, is that you get JD
And
like bring people back in, shut them up, and tell people, give him a second.
Yeah, I'm monitoring it. He seems squirmy to me. I'm not sure. I think Sarah might be right, but it's, I got an eye on it.
All right, guys, good show. Long show. We got to tighten these things up. They're starting to get really shaggy.
We've got lots of things to say to each other.
This is the problem.
Well, we need to tighten it up, or each other's bad takes. Okay, how about
or
that?
Or the world needs to settle down. Maybe the world needs to settle down.
We all get to deplatform one of each other's bad takes from the show, and that would cut out 12 minutes. Something to think about.
Maybe we could do it in post.
Okay.
Guys, hit like, hit subscribe, come follow along with us. Maybe we'll do an hour 45 next week. Who could say?
We might be live next week.
Oh, no. Actually, that's right. I will be here next week because we might be doing it live. We'll do it live.
This is a thing we're going to start trying.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists, too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.